Welcome everybody to the class on Parshas Emor 5766. I actually would like to give a title to this class. The title I would like to choose for this class is, Are You a Spiritual Person? Many people would like to know the answer to that. Some people already know the answer. They may be wrong. They may be not assessing themselves correctly. But I think it's a question that many people think about and would like to focus on to know themselves. And I think that what I'd like to present to you today may be a type of a test or a criteria for you to be able to answer that question about yourself. I would like to start by introducing a concept which I learned years ago from my teacher and show how it relates to the Parsha, and then try to make the case for this test of whether you are a spiritual person. The concept is that we live in a physical / spiritual world which has three primary planes, dimensions. Something, it has a height and a width and a length to it. Three dimensions, you know, geometric. So in this world, we also have three dimensions. And they are depicted by the three words, Olam, world, Shana, year, Nefesh, soul. There's also an acronym, Ayin, Shin, Nun, Ashan, which usually is translated as smoke. I'm not sure the significance of that acronym. But these three terms depict the three dimensions or the three planes in which we live. Olam, world, depicts the dimension of space. World, space. Shana, year, depicts the dimension of time. Very good. A year is a measure of time. And Nefesh, soul, depicts the dimension of spirit or people. The world is made up of places, times, and people. That's kind of what the world is based upon. It's like the game of Clue. Who done it? Where? And what did they use? So here it's like, who done it? Where and when? And the concept, as I heard it from my teacher of Yaakov Weinberg of blessed memory, was that these dimensions have multiple levels for each one. There are multiple levels of place. When I say levels, I mean different levels of sanctity or holiness. Because really, going back to the encyclopedic definition of Judaism and of the Torah, we live in a world which is a combination of tov and ra, good and bad, or holy and unholy. And by the way, I wanted to, as an addendum to last week, if you don't mind me sticking this in here, we use the term tov and ra, good and bad. We talked about last week how the basic premise of our existence in this world is that we have a Yetzer Tov and a Yetzer Ra, a good inclination and a bad inclination. Or to say that we as people are kind of good-bad. Let me tell you that Rabbi Moshe Chaim Luzzatto, in a third work called Das Tevunos, the Knowing Heart, he explains some of the spiritual concepts in more depth. And one of the things he defines is what is Tov and what is Ra? What is good and bad? What does it really mean bad? And he says, really, Tov means godly or connected with God. Ra means disconnected with God. Or what he calls really a void. Bad is not so much a tangible force, but rather it is a void of godliness. I just want to throw that out. We're not going to dwell on that. To show that when you say somebody's bad, what we really mean is that they are limited in their attachment to Hashem. And that's the definition of this world. In this world, we are not to be totally exposed to the revelation of God, because that would take away our ability to make those choices. leave it at that. Because this world is a world of the confluence of Tov and Ra, good and bad, because this world is a world where there is connectedness and also disconnectedness, therefore, in these three planes, Olam, Shana, and Nefesh, there have to be different levels. There have to be, for example, in Olam, in the realm of place, there has to be different levels of places. There has to be different kinds of places. Some where there is a greater possibility of connectedness with God, and some places where there is less of that access. So, for example, in the world, we have in geography, which has a spirit to it, where we live, let's say, outside of the land of Israel, is considered to be less connected with Hashem as a place. It's harder to gain access to connectedness with God outside of the land of Israel. In the land of Israel, there's more access. Like the joke goes, it's a local call, you know, from Israel to heaven. When you daven, it's cheaper. You can go to Yerushalayim, to Jerusalem, even closer. It's probably not a coincidence that geographically Yerushalayim sits on a hill, so that we can kind of internalize and concretize the notion that it really represents a spiritual height. You can go from Yerushalayim to the Temple Mount, which is even on a higher hill. And in the days of the temple, you could go into the temple courtyard. And you could go, if you were a certain type of a person, you could go into the sanctuary. And if you were the high priest, you could go into the Holy of Holies. So these are all different levels of access to sanctity through the dimension of place. The same thing is true with time. Don't we have different levels of time? Don't we have weekdays, which are the most ordinary, mundane? Don't we have Rosh Chodesh, the first of the month, which is not really a holiday, but it's a special day? There's extra prayers, there's extra offerings in the temple. Don't we have Chol HaMoed, intermediary days, in between holidays? Don't we have holidays? Don't we have Shabbos, which is even higher than holidays? Don't we have Yom Kippur? And the same thing is true with nefesh, with soul, with the spirit. We read last week about the different peoples, how way back in the days of Abraham, there was this kind of free-for-all, unformed, who was going to, after the fall of mankind, through the experience of the sin of Adam and Eve, that man kind of fell down to the lower level of man, who was going to try to strive for the spiritual? And it was Abraham, and it wasn't the other people. Everyone had an equal choice. And Abraham's people therefore inherited that spiritual elevation that he built up in himself. And so we have different levels of, yes, of people. Sorry to be not PC, but we have the non-Jew, we have the Jew, and then among the Jew we also have the Yisrael and the Levi and the Kohen. The Kohen can go further into the temple than the Levi can. So we even have different levels of spirit. And it's interesting, in Acharei Mos, when we read about the service on Yom Kippur, you have the highest level of spirit, the high priest, on the holiest day of the year, Yom Kippur, going into the holiest place on earth, the Kodesh HaKadoshim. That is the highest voltage experience, so once a year. Yes.
I guess the obverse of that is the 49 degrees of sin.
Of impurity?
The Haggadah?
Mm-hmm. Impurity, yes.
Mm-hmm. So it sort of starts there. And
mm-hmm. Right. Everything has a mirror image. Very good. Now, this Parsha Emor focuses, I believe, you could summarize the Parsha in a pretty full sense into emphasizing the aspect of the higher levels of nefesh, of spirit, and the higher levels of shana, of time. In that, two major topics in the Parsha are the laws of the Kohanim, the priests, who are the top level of nefesh, of the realm of people, spirit. And you also have, in the second half of the parsha, you have the section of the holidays and Shabbos. Shabbos and holidays, which is on the higher levels of the realm of time, of Shana. As far as place, maybe it's alluded to, but definitely Emor is concentrating on the upper levels of existence. So that, yes, all Jews always have to be holy at all times, wherever they are. But nevertheless, there are certain levels of holiness that go beyond the baseline. The baseline is Parshas Kedoshim. We should all be holy. We spoke about that last week. But then there's also the higher levels. Why is it that we have to have different levels? Why can't we just have a baseline? Why can't we just have either all the days of the week should be mundane or all the days of the week should be Shabbos? What is it about up, down, lower, higher? Why is it like that? Why does the world have so many levels and everything? Why do we have to move at all? Why can't we just stay on an even keel?
We'll get stiff.
Good answer. You're right. That is the answer. Let me read to you. I'm reading from the encyclopedia here. Derech Hashem, the way of God. Let me read to you something which really, really encapsulates a lot. He speaks about the periodic observances, such as Shabbos. On the margin, it says, "The world is unholy, but occasionally opportunities are granted us to partake of holiness." The basic idea of the Sabbath is related to a fact which was mentioned earlier, namely, that for the sake of the purpose of creation, i.e., to give man an opportunity to find God, to choose God, rather than being given to him, most of what is found in the world is mundane and not holy. On the other hand, it was deemed necessary that creations also be given some holiness, so that the world's spiritual darkness does not overwhelm them. If God wanted to give us the choice of finding him, he could have dropped us into a dark pit and asked us to get ourselves out of it, but we probably wouldn't be able to do that. In fact, we wouldn't be able to do that. So he has to give us, extend the rope to us. He's got to give us some type of means to erase ourselves. So he's got to give us bursts of holiness and then give us a chance to try to do it on our own. These matters, in their appropriate measures, were decided by the highest wisdom with absolute precision. How much of the dark and mundane would be necessary for creation? And how much of the holy must be added on? You ever hear people say, now maybe the people are ourselves, that's too holy for me. Oh, well, that's not holy enough. That's too much, too little. How do you know the measure? So that's really what God prescribed in the Torah. He gave us the measure, and it was precise. It's not random. God delineated all of this in the proper measures in terms of both quantity and quality regarding time, space, and every other phenomena that exists in creation. So now he speaks about time. Thus, the concept of time was divided into days, those which are mundane and those which are holy. Regarding the days which are holy, there are varying degrees of holiness, some being more holy than others, as deemed appropriate by God. Further, it was decreed that the great majority of days would be mundane and not holy, and the minority, which are holy, would only be in the number and measure that is necessary. You get the idea. For some reason, God came up with the ratio of 6 to 1, that a week should have 6 mundane days and 1 holy day. Why is it that way? I don't know. He is the pharmacist. And so he figured out that it was 6 to 1. That balance is crucial. If we do 5 and 2, it's going to be too much holiness. If we do 7 and 1, it's not enough holiness. God decided the amount. The same thing is true with people. Not everybody can be a Kohen. Not everybody should be a Kohen. Of the 12 tribes, well, 12 of them are not Kohanim and Leviim, and one is. Should everybody be a Kohen or a Levi? No. If everybody would be a Kohen or a Levi, that would be too much holiness.
You also have all chiefs and no Indians.
That's the secondary point. The main point is This is all part of the prescription of how many tribes of people that are involved in the, quote, the physical world, in various careers and occupations, and how many do not have careers, how many own land, how many don't own land. And that balance is crucial. And it's crucial for everybody to be part of that society, which is comprised of the different groups, the different divisions of holiness and mundane. Again, there's a baseline for everybody. We all have the commandment to be holy, and yet there are gradations at the same time. And so Emor teaches us the importance of having the institutions of the higher levels in our experience, the having the Kohanim. This is not just a parsha that Kohanim should study, where it says the law is that the Kohen should not become impure for a funeral, unless it's a family member, unlike the rest of the Jews, how there are restrictions for marriage that a Kohen has that a non-Kohen does not have. How a Kohen, if he has a certain type of a physical blemish, would be disqualified from serving, from doing his job, even though an ordinary Jew would not be disqualified from doing their job because they had that blemish. It's important that we all understand that it's important for us as a people to have these higher level beings among us, just like it's important for us to observe Shabbos, to have certain days, certain times, which have to be on a higher plane. And the reason that we need both is because our job is to find holiness from our mundane level. That means that we have to be exposed to holiness, to holy people, to holy places in the right measure. So I think now, based on these concepts, I would like to approach the question, are you a spiritual person? I couched it in contemporary terms because I think that's how we would ask the question. I think that to find the answer to that, we should ask ourselves these questions. I'm not a rabbi. I'm not a Kohen. I'm not a person who devotes my life to serving in the temple or in the synagogue or in the educational center or whatever the case may be. I'm not a rabbi. But what do I think about rabbis? What is my relationship to rabbis? Do I respect them? Or do I look at them and say, how come he's holier than I am? Why can't he be like everybody else? That's an important question to ask yourself. What is your attitude towards the Kohen, so to speak? I'm equating the Kohen. You know, in our day, we don't have the temple. We've discussed this before. Rabbi Weinberg says that the Kohen is alive and well, but he's living in a different form. He may be living in the form of your synagogue rabbi. He may be living in the form of your kollel rabbi. He may be living in the form of your school teacher. He may be living in the form of your mohel, or in the form of your scribe, or in the form of your simple Jew who spends his days and nights involved in chesed projects and sacrificing time from his own pursuits. What is my attitude towards the rabbi, towards the kohen? And ask ourselves another question. What is my attitude towards the synagogue? I'm not going to live in the synagogue, heavens no. But do I look forward to the one day or the time during the day that I go to the synagogue? Or do I say, well, I like my out-of-synagogue time better, and quite frankly, it would suit me fine to never go to the synagogue. You know, that's the question. We measure ourselves. Yes, most of our lives, again, we've got a baseline, most of our lives is going to be mundane, like Rabbi Luttazzo says. But do I cherish, do I treasure the holy within life, the opportunities? Do I treasure the opportunity to be in a place where prayers are being said? Maybe I'm not such a good prayer. Maybe I can't say the words, but I connect with the experience. It's valuable to me. It's vital to me to be there. And the same question with time. I am not going to keep Shabbos 7 days a week. Shabbos is not for 24/7. But is Shabbos part of my week? Do I look forward to Shabbos? And you know what the real test is? And this may be, in fact, one of the major questions. I read something this week in Mesilas Yesharim, in Rabbi Luttazzo's book on ethics, The Path of the Just, which was shocking. On page 77 in the new edition, in this chapter, chapter 11, he's going through various mitzvahs that people have a hard time really getting good at. And one of them is Shabbos. And he says, he writes a short paragraph. He says, I'm going to tell you what the most challenging part of Shabbos is for people who observe Shabbos. Okay, this is written in the 1600s. Okay, if I ask you the question, what is the most challenging part of keeping Shabbos? Nowadays, it might be different because, you know, we live in a much more open society. What would you think is one of the most challenging parts of Shabbos?
Shalashuris.
Eating shalashuris? That's amazing. Why do you think so? Because you're full. Too much holiness.
You're tired, and towards the end of the day, you come up, maybe it's my nap, and you may not be into it. You've already davened Friday night, Saturday, Shabbos.
Okay. Again, there's no right answer. Rabbi Luzzatto says, I'll read it to you. The observance of Shabbos and Yom Tov also demands great care. What is difficult for the masses to conform to is the prohibition against work and against any discussion of business matters. This is what hit me. It's difficult for people to refrain from discussing business matters on Shabbos. Now, you might say, there's not a great need for me to discuss business matters, and I'm not working anyways. Let's say I'm not working. I've committed myself. I don't go to work on Shabbos. So, what's the big difference if I discuss it or don't discuss it? Nothing's going to really happen. And you know what? That's not even prohibited by the Torah. Many of the laws of Shabbos are rabbinic. That's a rabbinic law. Why does Rabbi Luzzatto say that this is difficult for the masses to conform, to refrain from discussing business matters? I think it's because what you discuss is what's on your mind. And every person has to make a choice when he's keeping Shabbos. I can commit myself to do the actions of Shabbos or refrain from the forbidden actions of Shabbos. But the question is, am I happy to be here? Do I fully accept that Shabbos is a day like no other day? Do I fully accept that there is a this worldly existence which is comprised of mundane activities, of working, the 39 forms of work? And that relates specifically to Olam Hazeh, to this world. But there's also a totally different side of me. There is my soul. And my soul eventually will live beyond this world, and it will exist in a world where there is no melacha, there is no work to be done. It's just the experience of the spirit. And Shabbos is a time to access that other world. If I truly care about my spiritual side, I don't want to talk about business matters on Shabbos. That's not what Shabbos is for. I've got 6 days of the week to speak about my business matters. One day of the week is to speak about the spiritual matters and to forget about the business matters. The reason why it's so difficult is because it's a change of the mindset. A person could observe the technical laws, but still in his heart thinking about Sunday's golf game or fishing trip or Monday's business meeting or Tuesday's conference. Well, that's the test. If we were just as much invested in our spirit, and we understood the perspective, we understood that this world has its place, and it also has its limit. Inside of us, there is the mundane, and there is the holy. Just as the mundane has to be carried out, because that's the balance that God created the world with, the holy has to be nurtured. That's what we're going to stay with. That's what's going to be the eternal part. You follow the law of curtailing and readjusting what we think about. Now, legally, thinking is not prohibited. If you think about your business matter, you're not violating a law. There is no law that says you may not think about your business. There is a law that says you may not speak about your business. But that's a challenge, because if it's in my mind, chances are I'm going to talk about it. See, if somebody says that Shabbos is a day where we don't do certain things, if that's how a person defines Shabbos, he's missing the boat. He's missing the boat that that's not the purpose or the definition of Shabbos, a day where we don't do certain things. It's a day that God gave us to help nurture the spirit, because that is the ultimate purpose of life, is to build up the spirit and connect with God while living in a world, which is a mixture of holiness and mundanity. That's the test. Yes.
I'm going to the portion that was making reference to some other things when the word contaminate. So, getting also from what you're saying. And last week when we talked, and I'd asked the question about, am I my brother's keeper, you know, and what the responsibility is.
Right. I remember that question.
So mm-hmm. if we think it, it's still within us. But I'm getting that if we speak it, then we have a tendency to contaminate or desecrate.
Mm-hmm.
That's
true. It also becomes more real to us. You know, having a thought, but keeping it inside the realm of thought, it's not going to affect us as much as if we speak about it. It'll become much more heightened in our consciousness. And if we act upon it, even more so. Thank you.
It seems like the main thing you've got then that you've got to do for Shabbos is a lot of self-discipline.
Ah, of course.
That's why the rabbi is stressing, while we're in shul, davening, no conversation.
Right.
And focus 100% on the davening.
Excellent point.
Then you will really feel the spirituality.
Excellent point. Thank you so much. That would be in the realm of place. A person who comes to the synagogue and talks, what is he saying? I really don't want to be here. I like it more the other place. I like it more when I'm outside of the synagogue, and I like it so much that I'm going to try to bring it into the synagogue. It might be subconscious. I'm not saying he's doing it deliberately. But again, if there's how many hours in a week? If you have 200 hours in the week and you're going to spend 3 of them in the synagogue, so that means the vast majority of my hours are going to be in a mundane place and 3 will be in a holy place, how I will relate my attitude about being in that holy place is going to tell a lot about what my spirituality is. If I want to be there, when I'm there, in order to connect to God through this place, then I'm not going to want to be distracted. You know, 200 hours is enough. Enough of a balance. It's plenty. Really, I should be in the synagogue more than 2. You know, a person could go to the synagogue daily. But the point is, what do I do when I'm there? Same thing with the spirit. I'm not a rabbi. I don't live next to a rabbi. But once in a while, I get to meet one. I get to talk to one. What's my attitude when I do that? These are the questions that really are going to tell you if you're a spiritual person, I think. I think that that's the formula which is being taught here. Emor is about cherish those opportunities for connecting to the higher side. Respect the Kohen. Be glad that he's in our nation. Be glad that we have an opportunity to interact with, yes, and support. Give him the tithes. Whatever the laws are, that's crucial to my own spirituality, that I have a connection to the higher soul. And use those holidays, use the Shabbos as the time when I can have access to the holy and cherish my experiences being in the holy places. These are the questions. Nobody has to be a deep end person where they dive into the deep end. God does not ask anybody to be mostly heavy-duty holy. Baseline, yes. And you may call the Torah a pretty heavy baseline. But in the scheme of things, as Rabbi Luttazzo said, even living a religious life, most of the time, most of the people, most of the places are pretty worldly, pretty mundane. Yes, there are limitations. There are things that are contaminated. And there are things that are prohibited because they take us to the wrong side. But it's baseline. But cherish the experiences of the higher access also in the realms of Olam, place, Shana, time, and Nefesh, the spirit. Yes?
I'm stuck in something you said much earlier on about, I think, good and evil, or maybe mundane and holy, I'm not sure, where you said, I think, I don't mean to put words in your mouth, but you sort of said in effect that evil is the absence of God,
mm-hmm.
or is to be disconnected from mm-hmm. God. On some level, isn't it possible to argue that God created evil as well,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
for whatever purpose he had? I mean, I'm still reading the art scroll of Haggadah, and I noticed, in fact, the other day, that evil inclination is capitalized.
Uh-huh.
In the same way that Hashem would be capitalized.
Interesting, right.
And it wasn't really explained by mm-hmm. a rabbi or anything, but I took from that to mean that this is as much as a divine sense about it, if I can use that term, in the same way that good does.
Absolutely. God created good and evil.
But
why did he
create...
Well, that's the subject. This is a very deep philosophical point, that if it's the absence, how could it be a force? This is a philosophical question which is discussed in that book called The Knowing Heart. I don't understand it, really. But he goes at length, pages upon pages, to deal with this question. Is it a void, or is it something tangible? However you define it, evil was created by God for a purpose. The primary purpose, as we understand, is to give us a chance to overcome it. We respect it in the sense that it helps us fulfill our purpose. Much like the athlete needs to hurt himself by stretching and straining his body, his muscles, by hurting himself in order to make himself stronger. He's not trying to hurt himself, he's not trying to break himself down. But that is what's necessary, the necessary evil, as we say, in order to accomplish the greater good. So the purpose of the evil inclination is to be able to give us the opportunity to choose to rise above it and thus attach ourselves to God. In that sense, it's capitalized because it's crucial. If there wouldn't be an evil inclination, there'd be no purpose for our lives. Because then everything would be, what, given to us? God would just make us spiritual without any input from ourselves, without any choice in the matter. That would be what Rabbi Luzzatto calls the bread of shame. Here's some bread. You didn't earn it. There's no pleasure in that. There's no accomplishment.
No challenge.
No challenge. No pain, no gain.
I think that evil can be an example to understand it, can be looked at in the Nechash, the serpent, the creation, and in Mitzrayim, in Egypt, that Hashem didn't come into Egypt to speak to Moshe. Moshe left Mitzrayim to go to Goshen to speak to Hashem. But Hashem is everywhere surrounding. The evil is not, it's half like the yin and the yang, like you would say that there's evil and there's equally 50%. I think that my understanding of it would be a world with drawn area that Hashem allows for evil. And there's no, I think there's no evil.
What do you mean by that?
I think that
only found in certain places.
I think evil is a choice that's given only to man. I think that everything that Hashem created, like the animal world, whatever functions the way He created it, the stars, everything
functions
exactly like
creation. Angels too. Angels also don't have good and evil.
So
only man has good and evil.
So therefore, because it's only man, and we're obviously just physically, we're not a great part of the universe. You know, if you weigh us, you know, physically compared to the whole Earth, but as a force, it's a quantified amount. And it's smaller than, I mean, it's much smaller than all the good. And in all the people, also, there's much smaller amount of evil than there is amongst all the, you know, in the good. Mm-hmm. Whether it's Goyim or Jewish people, there's
the good is a smaller amount.
No, the good is the bigger amount.
That's not what we just read here.
But I think...
Here we said that most of time is mundane, most of people are mundane. I think it's really the opposite. Remember, Rabbi Luzzatto says at the beginning that after it was supposed to be balanced 50-50, and after the sin of the tree of knowledge, here.
Why are you saying the mundane is evil?
That's a good question also. That's another good question. Is spiritual good and physical evil? Not inherently. There's a concept that you can sanctify the material. But material on its own will be devoid. Unless the spirit is acting upon it, the physical, the material, is going to be devoid of connection with God. So in that sense, if you say evil is lack of connectedness, the physical has no means on its own to connect with God. So in that sense, it's bad. Not bad in the sense that it's inherently bad. It's not just neutral. Here, it's all in the encyclopedia. First of all, I wanted to read this. Among the things that one must realize is the fact that man has been radically altered. As a result of Adam's sin, a great change took place, transforming both man and his world to a large degree, entailing many things and having numerous effects. When Adam was first created, he was precisely in the state that we have discussed until now, composed of two equal opposites, the body and the soul. His environment contained both good and evil. He was balanced between the two to choose whichever he wished. The appropriate thing for him to have done would have been to choose the good. Had he done so, his soul would have overcome his body and the spiritual would have dominated the physical, he would have then immediately attained perfection, and it would have remained with him forever. When Adam sinned, however, things were greatly changed. The amount of evil that existed initially was just enough to assure that man would be in a perfect balance, allowing him to gain perfection through his own efforts. When man sinned, though, he caused evil to increase, both in himself and in all creation. As a result, it became more difficult for him to attain the perfection that God intended for him.
So Adam is really the villain in this great life we're living out. But for Adam, we'd all be living in paradise right now.
Right. Now the question is, was God disappointed? He gave Adam the free choice, and when Adam ate from the tree, did Hashem say, oh my goodness, why did he have to do that? Or like they say, why didn't Noah just swat those two mosquitoes? You know, he's leading all the animals in two by two. Just the mosquitoes. Leave them out, please. Or you could say that God creating man with the ability to make the wrong choice really had a greater plan, which is to allow man to make the evil choice, the wrong choice, and then to overcome even that. To enable man to come from being the underdog and to still try to climb what a higher perfection. According to Rabbi Dessler, that's why Adam ate from the tree of knowledge. He said, if I eat from it and I can overcome being the underdog, we will demonstrate even a higher level of devotion and we'll come even closer to God. Actually, that made a lot of sense. The reason why it was a mistake was because once you take that bite, you lose the control to be able to carry out what it is that you want to carry out. As soon as the evil becomes within you, you're going to lose the focus of that. You're not going to have that inspiration to even say, I'm going to rise above it. You're going to be dragged down. And so we're living the reality of being the underdog. But the good news is that a little bit of holiness goes a long way. See, the harder it is to do, the more power and the more value to every little effort. Every little mitzvah does so much more now than it would before. That's the good news. Because Hashem takes into account what man's trials are, what his challenges are. It's a total picture. It's not one size fits all. And that's true for groups and it's true for individuals. Every person's spiritual achievement is unique. For one person to do a mitzvah, a small mitzvah, could be greater than for a greater person who has greater opportunities to do than doing a big mitzvah. So that's the good news. There's always justice, and there's also mercy. The mercy is, I don't expect the world from you. I expect you to try. I expect you to make an effort. I will help you. That's where the mercy comes in. And justice never suffers. Yes?
So I want to make a point of the 6 days of creation.
Yeah.
Is it true that after each day, Hashem said, and it was good, when he made the days, or which days, on specific days, that he said, and or whatever it was. I think there's some days, I can't say if there's all of them, but it says and it was good.
Very good. All of them, except for the second day.
Okay, so on that, let's say except for the second day basis, I'm going to relate that now to the 6 days before Shabbos.
Okay.
Mundane days, as we call them.
You mean weekdays?
Weekdays.
Okay.
Okay, on that basis, modeling Hashem's creation, mm-hmm. where it was good,
mm-hmm.
we have a greater opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
He gave us a huge opportunity
mm-hmm.
in 6 days
mm-hmm.
to do something good with six mm-hmm. days,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to looking at it mm-hmm. from a way we're saying six, you know, nothing days, and then Shabbos.
Mm-hmm.
So there's 6 days. It's a greater gift to have
mm-hmm.
in 6 days. You have more opportunity to do something great
mm-hmm.
than the 6 days, learning Torah, doing tzedakah,
right.
being a good friend, whatever, all the good mitzvahs a person can do. That you have a really big gift in that, to make those days good.
Mm.
Shabbos, you don't have a choice. You kind of have to
okay.
have the formula.
What you're saying, you're giving an interesting counterpoint to my presentation. I was saying that a criterion for deciding if you're a spiritual person is how do you relate to the elevated mm-hmm. status of something. How do you relate to Shabbos? You're making the counterpoint, and that is the real question of whether you're a spiritual person is what do you do on the weekdays?
When it's harder.
So to your answer, I will say that it depends on the person. That for you, you're on your level, That may be where you're holding. And that Shabbos is something which is so precious to you, and it is a given, so that for you, you're now working on the level of sanctifying the mundane. And my point may have been maybe a little bit more universal, that before we work on our weekdays, let's try to work on our Shabbos. Let's first appreciate that we have a Shabbos and say that we're even striving for spirituality when it's most readily available. I think you're talking on a higher level. And every person has his own relativity. But one thing is for sure, that if we don't make room in our lives for the Shabbos and for the Kohen and for the holy places, then we're not, then something's lacking in our striving, in our ambition, in our goals. What is it that we're seeking? So that's, I think, a first step, a first test as to whether we're spiritual. And maybe yours is a graduate level. Okay, yes.
I have a question.
Shkala.
With what you were saying about good and evil and how it was in balance and now out of balance and all that, is this a possibly valid view of it? This is the way it was,
mm-hmm.
with the possibility going either
mm-hmm.
way. When Adam did his thing, it moved it this way.
Okay.
Now, it means that it's weighted this way. Doesn't make it impossible for anybody to get over here.
Correct. Oh.
They won't necessarily push the scale over this way, but it's going to be a hard work, and
right.
that the evil is actually anything that brings us down.
Yes.
And it doesn't have to be something major bad. It
right.
could be like the chocolate cake, you know, or
right.
whatever.
Right, right.
But anything that brings us down from going up this way would
right.
be what's evil.
Right. Right. That's correct. That's a good analogy. It's like when you're doing a treadmill and you change the incline. You used to do it like this, and now you're doing it like this?
Yeah. Shkoach.
Shkoach.
Shkoach.